Hello everyone, welcome to J-Talk Extra Time. John Steele hosting again this week. All of the latest J2 and J3 news is coming up. The episode is in three parts this week. In part one, I'll give you a solo rundown of all of the J2 action from the final day of the regular season, round 42 last weekend. In part two, I got together with Gary Irwin, the official Roasso Kumamoto correspondent for JTET. We talked about their final day game against Yokohama FC and also previewed the playoff matches coming up this weekend. And then in part three, as usual, it's the regularly scheduled JTalk short corner segment. Magic Mike Innes has all of the J3 information that you need coming up in that segment. Just before we start the podcast proper, though, I'd like to kind of add my own personal comments on Masato Kudo, Miyazaki striker who tragically passed away at just 32. I don't really have anything to add that, other guys on the pod haven't said better already. So, Ben, Johnny Nicol and Dan Olowitz, they gave a really moving tribute on the big pod this week. And Mike has some comments on Masato Kudo coming up in the short corner that I echo as well. So I just wanted to say, always enjoyed watching him play. And my thoughts go out to his wife and young daughter who must be going through unimaginable grief at the moment. So rest in peace, Masato Kudo. Thanks for all the memories and the goals, and we'll never forget you in the J League world, I don't think. So rest in peace. So with the on-field action in J2 last weekend, round 42, the big news story before kickoff was the three-way battle for sixth place between Tokushima, Sendai, and Yamagata. In the end, it was Yamagata who snatched the final playoff spot, beating Tokushima 3-0 at ND Soft Stadium. Yamagata had to win this game to have a chance of finishing sixth, and they got off to a perfect start when they took the lead in the 15th minute. Usually impeccable, Tokushima goalkeeper Jose Suarez played a loose pass straight to Ibuki Fujita, and he fed in-form Akira Disaro on the edge of the penalty area. He fired in a low shot into the bottom corner and put Yamagata 1-0 up. The sense that it was going to be Yamagata's day only got stronger 4 minutes later when Tokushima were reduced to 10 men. El Sino shown a second yellow card for tangling with Taiki Kato about 25 yards from the Tokushima goal. From the resulting free kick, Shintaro Kokubu struck the outside of Suarez's right-hand post, so Yamagata 1-0 up at half-time. Just before the hour, Yamagata got the crucial second goal, with Fujita and Disaro combining again. Fujita's low cross from the right was measured perfectly for Disaro to tap in from about 6 yards to make it 2-0, and a perfect afternoon for the home side was completed right at the end of the second half when they were awarded a fairly soft penalty. Thiago Alves colliding with a defender and going to ground inside the box. Thiago himself took the penalty and sent Suarez the wrong way from the spot to make it the final score, Yamagata 3, Tokushima 0. So Yamagata finished 6th and will head to 3rd place Okayama in round 1 of the playoffs this weekend. A shattering result for Tokushima, for whom just nothing at all went right on the day. And after starting the day in the playoff zone in 6th, they end the season 8th. Sendai's end-of-season collapse continued, and that saw them miss out on the top 6 completely. They could only draw 0-0 at Tohoku neighbours Akita. Sendai had to win this match to stand any chance of reaching the playoffs, and naturally they threw everything at Akita, but the well-organised and determined defending that we've come to expect from Ken Yoshida's side meant that there was no way through for the visitors. The stats are interesting reading though. Sendai had 17 shots to Akita's 2 and 8 corners to Akita's 1. So everything, including the kitchen sink, was thrown at Akita, but the final score was Akita 0, Sendai 0. Sendai will be led again by Akira Ito in 2023 as they look to bounce back from this disappointment. It's already been announced that his contract's been extended. While it's been a superb year for Akita, so Yoshida has already had his contract renewed for next season as well. Akita finished 12th after a superb run-in this season. Sendai end up in 7th. As mentioned already, Yamagata's opponents in the first round of the playoffs will be Okayama, who finish 3rd, but ended the regular season with a second straight defeat, this time 2-0 away at Tokyo Verdy. Okayama had a let-off in the first half when their defender Mizuki Hamada cleared the ball against his own post, with the ball eventually going out for a corner. But the visitors' luck ran out in the 34th minute. A well-flighted cross from the left from Ren Kato was headed in by an unmarked Keito Kawamura to make it 1-0. And Okayama left themselves with too much to do when they gave away a second goal just after the hour. Rookie midfielder Haruka Motoyama accidentally passed straight to Verdy striker Ryoga Sato, who slid the ball under goalkeeper Daiki Hotta from about 20 yards to make it 2-0. That's 13 goals for Sato for the second season in a row after his stellar debut in 2021. You have to feel that a move to a big club or J1 club might be on the cards. The closest Okayama came to a goal was in stoppage time when a header from Ryo Nagai clipped the top of the crossbar. So yeah, final score at Ajinomoto's Tokyo Verdy 2, Okayama 0. So Okayama will face Yamagata in the playoffs, having lost three of their last four matches. Meanwhile, an impressive finish to the season for Verdy. They end up 9th in the final table, just 3 points outside the top six. And they ended the season in rude health, 6 straight wins and 5 straight clean sheets. There was a party atmosphere at Egao Kenko Stadium, and a fantastic match. It finished Kumamoto 3, Yokohama FC 4. So Yokohama FC already promoted before this game, and Shunsuke Nakamura was playing his final professional game after announcing his retirement earlier in the week. And the home side Kumamoto were already certain of a playoff place and needed a win to make sure of having a home tie in the first round. In the end, though, the result here was irrelevant because 5th-placed Oita lost at Ryukyu, and that handed 4th place to Kumamoto anyway. We should add as well an amazing crowd of over 20,000, 21,508 inside the stadium for this one. So fantastic stuff, and a perfect start for Kumamoto in just the 5th minute. Yokohama gave a run out to Akinori Ichikawa in goal, but he blundered by passing the ball straight out to Kumamoto's now hero Sugiyama, and he placed the ball over Ichikawa from about 20 yards to make it 1-0. But Yokohama drew level in the 20th minute. A long ball down the Kumamoto left was missed by defender Masahiro Sugata, and that allowed Zane Isaka to get into the penalty area and cut the ball back for Koki Ogawa to roll into the net. Kumamoto's keeper Yuya Sato had come out to confront Isaka, so the goal was unguarded when the ball reached Ogawa. So it was 1-1 at half-time, and the start of the second half was brilliant for Kumamoto as they scored twice in the space of 3 minutes. In the 46th minute, Koki Sakamoto did well on the left-hand side of the Yokohama penalty area and got the ball to Sugiyama in a pocket of space about 12 yards out. Sugiyama placed the ball into the bottom corner to make it 2-1, his 9th goal of the season. And just after that, 2 minutes later, it was 3-1, a lovely goal as Toshiki Takahashi was sent clean through by So Kawahara's perfect through ball, and Takahashi beautifully chipped the ball over the onrushing Ichikawa. But this game had some real end-of-season energy, and Yokohama reduced the deficit just 6 minutes later when a Kumamoto attack broke down. Yokohama countered, and Tatsuya Hasegawa was able to release Koki Ogawa, who fired past Sato with supreme confidence to make it 3-2. Ogawa's 26th goal of the season, which is a club recorder in a single season for Yokohama FC, one more than Iba managed in J2 a few years back for Yokohama FC. The drama didn't stop there. In the 82nd minute, a deep free kick from Heiner went all the way to the back post, and his compatriot Gabriel was waiting and unmarked, and he fired the ball across the goal and into Sato's bottom left-hand corner. That made it 3-3. And then on another counter-attack in the 88th minute, Marcelo Hian, Ogawa and Sho Ito all combined to set up a crossing chance for Toa Yamane down the Yokohama FC left, and his low cross was slammed in off the post from 6 yards by Marcelo Hian to make it 4-3. And that's how the game finished. Kumamoto 3, Yokohama FC 4. Wow, fantastic stuff. And I'll be talking in depth with Gary Ewing about this game in part 2. As mentioned already, Oita weren't able to pip Kumamoto to 4th spot and finish 5th after losing 1-0 at relegated Ryukyu on the final day. The crucial goal came in the 11th minute, a slip from Oita defender Pereira presented the ball to a fellow Brazilian, Kelvin, and his right-wing cross was headed in by Koki Kiyotake. In rainy conditions at the Tapic Hyagon Stadium, Ryukyu had to cope with a barrage of late Oita pressure, and the visitors did have the ball in the net in second-half stoppage time with a near-post header from a corner, but the goal was disallowed for a foul, correctly, I think. So the full-time score was Ryukyu 1, Oita 0. Ryukyu give their fans something to feel good about after a very rough season and will now start rebuilding for life in J3 next year. Meanwhile, for Oita, their attentions will turn to their playoff game, which will be at Kumamoto on a Sunday afternoon. Champions Niigata ended their five-year spell in J2 by beating Machida 2-1 at home, thanks to a brace from Shunsuke Mito. Great attendance as well at the Big Swan, 25,414. The Niigata party started in the 13th minute as Ryotaro Ito, one of the players of the J2 season, it has to be said, released Mito, who fired the ball into the bottom corner from about 20 yards to make it 1-0. But Machida levelled with a clever corner kick routine in the 38th minute. Taiki Hirato rolled the ball to the edge of the penalty area for Ryo Takai to clip a high ball to the back post where Jun Okano headed in. A great goal from Machida. In the second half, the visitors survived a classic goalmouth scramble, repelling three shots in a row inside the penalty area. That was just after the hour. But Niigata won it 7 minutes from time, with an ex-Machida favourite involved in the goal. Mito played a sharp 1-2 with Koji Suzuki, the ex-Machida man, of course. Mito got free inside the Machida box and then brilliantly dinked the ball over Zelvia goalkeeper William Pop. He'd come on for Koki Fukui at half-time, who I think must have got an injury in the first half. So the final score was Niigata 2, Machida 1. Congratulations to Niigata. They are worthy champions who got to celebrate and lift the J2 plate trophy thing at full time on the pitch at the Big Swan. Machida finish 15th after ending the season with 5 straight defeats. They will start life next season with Aomori Yamada's Go Kuroda as their new manager. So it'll be fascinating to see how that goes next year. At JIT Recycling Stadium in Yamanashi, two managers took charge of their sides for the last time. Tatsuma Yoshida's Kofu beat Yutaka Akita's Iwate 2-0 on the day. Iwate did have the ball in the net early on with Tsuyoshi Miyachi on target, but he was correctly judged to be offside and the goal was disallowed. Kofu finally broke through just before the hour mark when Kazushi Mitsuhira played in Yoshiki Torikai down the Kofu left. Torikai easily got past covering defender Kentaro Kai and slipped the ball into the net from a very tight angle for 1-0. And it was 2-0 8 minutes later when a shot from Sho Araki from just outside the box took a deflection off Iwate's Daisuke Fukagawa that carried it into the net. Kofu finish 18th, but of course have the consolation of being Emperor's Cup winners and can look forward to Asian Champions League football in 2023. Iwate finished bottom, a full 8 points clear of safety, and they return to J3 for next season. Kanazawa and Tochigi ended the season with a 0-0 draw in the rain at Ishikawa Athletic Stadium. The closest we came to a goal here was a fine save from Tochigi goalkeeper Kazuki Fujita after a looping header from Kyohei Sugiura near the end of the first half. So not a great deal to mention here in terms of action, but I will add a friend of JTET and Big Pod Victor was at the game in a pitch side seat during his trip to Japan. So I'm glad he got the full J2 experience by getting a piss wet through in an athletic stadium with no roof. So Victor, I hope you enjoyed the game and I'm looking forward to talking to you soon. But yeah, Kanazawa 0, Tochigi 0 was the final score. Kanazawa N22 in 14th place in the final table, with Tochigi 17th. Mito ended their Tadahiro Akiba era with a 2-1 home win over Gunma. That means that Mito finished 13th in the table and Gunma 20th. Plenty of excitement in this Kite Kanto derby. Mito had to come back from a goal down to win it. The home side could have gone in front in the last minute of the first half when they were awarded a penalty. Yuya Takagi tussling with Takaya Kuroishi in the box. But Kosuke Kinoshita's spot kick was well saved by Gunma keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki, and the sides went in level at half-time at 0-0. In the second half, Gunma nearly took the lead when a low curling strike from Kazuma Okamoto hit the base of the post and came back out into play. But Tsuyoshi Otsuki's men did hit the front after earning a penalty of their own in the 58th minute. Mito's Ryosuke Maeda was adjudged to have impeded rookie Gunma attacker Motoki Nagakura inside the area. It looked like a bit of a dive on the slow motion replay, but the penalty was given. Shuto Kitagawa took the penalty, but that was saved well by Mito's keeper Luis Yamaguchi. But Yuya Takagi was rushing into the box to follow up, and he volleyed the loose ball into the roof of the net. That made it 1-0 Gunma. The lead lasted just 10 minutes though. Jefferson Tabinas, unmarked at the far post, headed in a corner to make it 1-1. And Gunma then had chances to retake the lead. Takagi's fierce drive from inside the box rattled the underside of the crossbar. And Gunma sub Ryo Kawamoto tested Yamaguchi with a low drive. Mito then won it in the 94th minute when Yoshitake Suzuki and Kaio Yanagimachi combined to set up Shoji Toyama about 12 yards from goal. He rifled a left-footed shot past Kushibiki to spark wild celebrations among the home fans at Kei's Denki Stadium. Someone should really tell Shoji Toyama he is allowed to score earlier than second half stoppage time. He seems to be dealing exclusively in last gasp winners at the moment. But the final score was Mito 2, Gunma 1. Jeff United ended their season and life under coach Yoon Jong-kwan by winning 3-1 at Yamaguchi. It was actually Yamaguchi who struck first in just the 8th minute here, Wataru Tanaka collecting a pass from Kento Hashimoto inside the box and firing low into the bottom corner. And Yamaguchi nearly added a second goal straight away when Jeff lost possession close to their own goal, but goalkeeper Shota Arai made a double save to keep the score down. There were similar scenes at the other end as Yamaguchi gifted possession back to Jeff. Solomon Sakuragawa played in Toshiyuki Takagi, but his near post shot was blocked by Kentaro Seki in the home goal. The visitors equalised in the 57th minute when Takagi tried his luck from the edge of the box after a corner had been cleared out to him. His shot took a deflection off Yamaguchi forward Kazuma Takai, wrong-footed goalkeeper Seki, and went in off the crossbar. And the away side turned the game around completely 5 minutes later. A loose pass out of defence from veteran centre-back Hirofumi Watanabe was seized upon by his Jeff counterpart Iki Arai, who strode into the penalty area and placed the ball coolly past Seki's right hand and into the bottom corner for 2-1. A very smart finish from Arai, who has 8 goals this season from centre-back. Impressive stuff from him. The points were sealed with a third Jeff goal in stoppage time, with two substitutes combining. Takaki Fukumitsu's right-wing cross was perfect for Keita Buanika, who'd only been on the field for about 3 minutes, to convert. So the final score was Yamaguchi 1, Jeff United 3. Jeff end the season in 10th place, just 3 points short of a playoff spot, with Yamaguchi finishing 16th. And it's already been confirmed by Yamaguchi that their coach Yoshihiro Natsuka will be in charge for 2023 as well. Last but definitely not least, there was archetypal J2 fare at the NAC 5 stadium as Omiya and Nagasaki ended up drawing 3-3. Omiya have made a habit of scoring early goals under Naoki Soma, and it was the same story in this game, just 4 minutes gone when the Squirrels took the lead. Hiroki Kurimoto heading in a right-wing cross from Shuto Okaniwa. But the sides were level at the break after a 20-yard free kick from Clayson made it 1-1 in the 22nd minute. I'm not sure about the Omiya goalkeeper Ko Shimura's footwork on this goal, but it was a good strike from Clayson. In the second half, it was Nagasaki who struck early on with a counter-attack in the 48th minute. Yohei Otake carried the ball into the Omiya half and fed Edgar Junior, who swept the ball into the bottom corner from just inside the penalty area to make it 2-1 to the visitors. Omiya equalised just after the hour though, when a corner made it all the way through to Yutaro Hakamata, who was underneath the crossbar inside the 6-yard box. He volleyed home from just a couple of yards. Then 4 minutes after that, Omiya were in front again, thanks to a penalty. Shinya Yajima made the most of some contact with Shunya Yoneda inside the box, and a foul was given. Masaya Shibayama converted from 12 yards, and Omiya were 3-2 up. Old habits die hard, though, don't they? And Omeo were punished for some dozy defending in the 78th minute after they survived a goalmouth scramble. Goal scorer Kurimoto dithered in possession on the edge of his own six-yard box. He had his pocket picked by Ryohei Yamazaki, and Yamazaki played the ball across the box for Asaki Uenaka to score and make it Omiya 3, Nagasaki 3 at full-time. So Nagasaki finish 11th in the final J2 league table, 8 points outside the top 6. It's been announced already they'll continue with their Brazilian coach Fabio Carille as manager for next season, so we'll watch that with interest. Meanwhile, Omiya, they end their campaign for 2022 in 19th place, 6 points clear of the relegation zone. Okay, that's the final round of J2 action rounded up, I think. Please stay tuned. After a quick pause, you'll hear my chat with Gary Irwin. We talked about Kumamoto 3, Yokohama C4 from the weekend, and we also previewed both of the first round playoff games coming up this weekend. So please stay tuned. J2 Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again, and I'm joined for part two by a very special guest to help me with some J2 focus discussion. It's Gary Irwin. Gary, how's it going?
John, thanks for having me back. Going well. As a Roessa supporter, I'm excited to talk about the upcoming games.
Well, yeah, I know when I texted you to ask if you'd be able to join me on the pod for a chat this week, you did reply very quickly, Gary, which I appreciate from a kind of scheduling point of view, but also I think it just gives an insight into how happy the mood is at Kumamoto right now. Yeah, for anyone that didn't hear our chat last time, we talked about a couple of months ago, right, round 27, I think it was. You're our kind of official Roasso Kumamoto correspondent for JTET. So, Gary, the listeners have already heard me give a kind of bare bones review of the game from the weekend. So, you know, Kumamoto 3, Yokohama FC 4, it was a pretty kind of wild end of season affair. It kind of had that kind of vibe about it. You were in the stadium on the day, in the sunshine, enjoying the goals and the action. So from a fan's perspective, just tell us what it was like and how the day unfolded from your point of view.
Well, I don't know if you mentioned, but there was 22,000 there in a stadium that holds about 32,000. So it was pretty full, and it's maybe 10 times the normal attendance. So it was basically standing room only in my section. So lots of people up at the back. It was very noisy, and Yokohama brought a big away contingent, and they were very noisy. So it was a great atmosphere at the game. First half, Roasso were by far the better team, but as usual, went in at one apiece. And then second half, when Roasso scored two quick-fire goals, I thought, oh, you're in dreamland now. We're going to score 5, 6, 7. We'll all be really happy. But then I don't know what happened. Yokohama just switched on, and they got back into the game. And last 10 minutes, scored two goals. And that's when we decided we'll throw the kitchen sink at them then. And we had Sato go up for corners and try and get the equalizer, but it wasn't to be. But in the end, we got our fourth place. We were happy. And I think most of the 22,000 supporters went home happy too.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good roundup. And I think just to pick up on the point about Yokohama FC, it's not the first time this season where I've been left kind of scratching my head to work out how they've extracted points, or a win, or you know, they have that Shuhei Yamada style. They have a way of kind of squeezing all of the juice out of the orange, but not for the full 90 minutes, right? So there's quite a few games where they've ended up with points this year. That they might not have looked like they were going to get, you know, earlier in a game. So yeah, but yeah, fair play to Yokohama FC. They're promoted, and rightly so. Were there any nerves around the place before the kickoff, Gary? Because you mentioned it a bit, you know, big crowd, bigger crowd than usual, kind of party atmosphere. But you know, Kumamoto didn't know yet that they were safe in fourth place, right? Because Oita lost their game, so that guaranteed a home tie in the playoffs coming up. But Kumamoto didn't know that at kickoff, and they didn't know that during the game. So was it tense, or was it just a kind of party atmosphere, really?
No, I didn't sense any nerves, not from the crowd, and not from even the end where all the, let's say, the hardcore supporters come and cheer. But no, there was no, because this is Roasso's best season ever. So whether we finished fourth or fifth, it was going to be our best season ever anyway. So we were going to have a party at full-time whistle, win, lose or draw. Mm. And that we finished fourth, it's a great bonus. We get another game out of it. But no, for the actual day of the game, everyone was just happy that we were there in the playoffs and season was going to continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just watching on TV and then checking the highlights afterwards, it did have that real kind of, it just seemed like a great day out, like nice and sunny, a stadium which is not always full, looking really full. And you mentioned the atmosphere being pretty raucous. It felt like that on the TV. Watching as well, loads of goals. The game seemed like it was played in a pretty good spirit from what I could gather, as well as at a good tempo. So it was just all around good family entertainment, I suppose. You mentioned just kind of being happy to be there. You know, Kumamoto have already announced this week that Takeshi Oki, the manager, has had his contract renewed for next season. That's obviously a no-brainer with how brilliantly the team has done this year. Is there any sense that, you know, the way that you were talking just then, it's like going into the playoffs is kind of it's just an exciting bonus at the end of a great season. Like there isn't really any pressure on Kumamoto, is there, going into these games?
No, I don't think so. Of the four teams, well, Okayama have never been in the playoffs either, but I guess there's more pressure on Yamagata and Oita, having been previous J1 teams. Mm. So if Roasso didn't make it to J1, it's still a successful season. Mm. But for the other sides, maybe if they fail now, it's another poor season for them. Yeah. Even though there's maybe a point or two in the difference between our sides.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic stuff. And on the game itself on Sunday, I felt like we saw, you kind of mentioned with that kind of, you know, weary resignation that they played so well in the first half, Kumamoto, but weren't in front at the break. So if any Oita fans are listening, trying to get the inside track for the big game on Sunday, Kumamoto, I think we just by watching them, we can see the strengths, right? That front three, So Kawahara, you know, with the through ball for Takashi for the third goal was a kind of goal that they... You don't see Kumamoto score that often, but they have that as well. You know, you associate Takashi with like the towering headers, right? But he can do everything. He's great. Mm. So the strengths are there for all to see. But how about the weaknesses? I mean, obviously, it was a bit of a weird game on Sunday because Kumamoto don't let in four goals very often at home, obviously. So where would you be most concerned about for the game on Sunday, I guess, is I'm kind of moving into sort of Sunday preview territory. But so where were the big weaknesses on Sunday? Why did Kumamoto end up losing, do you think?
Well, in the second half, we did go 3-1 up. So I thought they'd put the first half, not poor performance, because they had more of the possession, more of the chances. Mm. It's just when we commit ourselves forward, and the other team wants to break away, there's always that chance. Our backline isn't the quickest. It can read the game well. Mm. But if you have a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2, then we usually end up in trouble giving up a good chance. Mm. So a team, even if we're pinning them back for like the whole game, they can still get two or three good chances, which will equate to the two or three good chances we would get in all the possession we have. Right. So I think Oita, they'll still get chances, whether they're dominating us or we're dominating them. They'll still be getting good chances. They just have to take them, which Yokohama did, unfortunately, on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose one point in your favour is Oita don't have anyone as lethal as Koki Ogawa in their squad. I think he's ended up as the top scorer, hasn't he, with 26 in the league this season. So you don't have to worry about him again. This year, which is good. I was a bit surprised seeing Kumamoto, because I don't watch all the Kumamoto games and I don't watch them as close as you, but when it was 3-1, Yokohama quickly pulled a goal back on the counter, didn't they, when Hasegawa played Ogawa in. I was a bit surprised to see like the Kumamoto's back four kind of on halfway at that point, because I kind of felt like, you know, at 3-1 up, maybe the back four can drop a little bit deeper. But I don't think Takeshi Oki likes to play that way, does he? I think it is very kind of front, it's very up front football. And I think Kumamoto are always trying to be progressive and play, even if they're 3-1 up. They don't necessarily want to sit back and let the game you know, you just sit on the game and manage the game. I think they want to keep going. So that perhaps that's something to admire about them and not to criticize. Of course, you have Yuya Sato, who likes to be the sweeper, doesn't he? So perhaps they'd feel that even if the back four is quite high, you know, close to halfway, that they've got a good sort of, you know, Manuel Neuer type goalkeeper, you know, it's sweeping up at the back. So, yeah, and I think as well, sometimes you can read a bit too much into end of season matches, can't you? I think obviously Kumamoto would have wanted a home game in the playoffs, but for the reasons you've outlined already, it's not as vital for them. There's not as much pressure on them as other teams who finished in the top six, because this is kind of, you know, an amazing season. We've got the kind of Denmark the European Championships in 1992 sort of feeling about it. So and yeah, York obviously were already promoted before the game, so perhaps we shouldn't go overboard analysing, you know, a 4-3 result on the final day.
Yeah, I think you're right, John, because we did make five changes in the second half. The team really did suffer for it. The subs that were brought on weren't as good as what we had initially on the pitch, and I don't think he would have made as many or as frequent changes if it had been it was an important game, but as I said, it had that end of season last game party. Definitely. Atmosphere,
yeah,
like just attack, so it could have been any score.
Yeah, you feel like I got the feeling it would have been quite a different game if that had been like a sort of, you know, Wednesday night in August or something, you know, in the middle of the season. But yeah, no, it was fantastic entertainment regardless. And just how much of this season have you watched in disbelief, Gary? Because obviously Kumamoto, you know, they're back in J2 this year, coming up from J3. Of course, for a newly promoted team, I suppose that the main goal is kind of survival, right, in the higher division. Kumamoto have just... they've gone absolutely crazy, and they got into the top six and just stayed there totally on merit. Do you have to sort of you know, pinch yourself when you go into the games, or have you? Because I think you were tweeting that you predicted Kumamoto would be in the top six this year. So I'm trying to, what I'm getting at is, what did you know in February that we didn't, I guess?
Yeah, I did predict them to sneak in to a playoff place out of hope. More than anything, it was mainly because at the end of the J3 season last year, we were in good form. We had a good settled team, and that was going to stay with us for J2. So I thought we'd get a good start and get momentum. And we usually always have a good first half of a season and then trail off. And we did it again this year, but the trail off never really happened. So as it came to August, September and October, at every home game, I'm like, oh, maybe this is the one where we take a hiding and we fall down the table. But it never happened. It never happened. They kept the form going. So by the end, halfway through the season, I was thinking, yeah, we could do this. We could do this. And every week went by and no team was passing us out. So we stuck to fourth, and here we are.
Yeah, well, once they can, I think one time we chatted about how the home form was a problem, right? Or scoring goals at home was a problem. That seems like a million years ago now. You know, once that problem was fixed and the home form was flowing, they Kumamoto have just been a really difficult team to play against, home and away, haven't they, for other teams, I think. So, yeah, no, it's been fantastic. And I think maybe from the JTEP point of view, James and I, we perhaps haven't talked about Kumamoto enough during the season. Something we chatted about in the green room just before recording was how they don't think we can say they've sneaked into the playoffs exactly, because they've been, you know, they're fourth and they've been there for a good few weeks, but they've definitely gone at times this season, it feels, under the radar. They just kind of established themselves in that kind of top six, top eight, and then, like you said, nobody's got past them, nobody was able to catch up to them. So it's an absolutely fantastic achievement. And yeah, Takeshi Oki seems like a really nice guy. I know he was successful, wasn't he, partly at Kyoto, and then it didn't go great at Gifu after that. But yeah, he's definitely got one of the most kind of infectious sort of smiles, I think, when of a manager. So yeah, really, really pleasing for him, and he's got his new contract for next year. So. Yeah, I'm almost. I'm knocking you out of the playoffs already, almost. But I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next season as well. But yeah, fantastic stuff. Fantastic. Okay, Gary, before I say anything else silly, perhaps we could move on and you could help me to preview the kind of playoff games coming up at the weekend.
The weekend, yes.
If that's okay. So for anyone who's uninitiated and also for me, so that I can get this straight in my head. So this Sunday, the 30th of October, both of the playoff round one games are going to take place for J2 teams. So at the very specific time of 1:05 on Sunday, the 30th of October, we have the big match, right? Kumamoto against Oita at the Egao Kenko Stadium. And then rather unfortunately, if you're someone that wants to watch both games, at 2 p.m., so at half time of your game, Gary, it's the other first round match, right? So Okayama against Yamagata, right? So third place against sixth place from the regular season. And the regulation that most people hate, but we have to mention, is in the J2 playoffs, okay, the highest placed team from the regular league table gets the home game. So it's Kumamoto at home against Oita, Okayama at home against Yamagata. And in the 90 minutes, the home team only needs a draw to advance, right, to the next round. So if it's nil-nil at full time, Kumamoto will go through to round two. Or, you know, Okayama would go through to round two. So the away team, the Oita and Yamagata, the two away teams, they have to win in the 90 minutes to progress. And I won't ask your thoughts on that, Gary, because we'd be going over time, I think, if we get into that. But it's the rules, you know, it's the cards we've been given, so we have to play with them. So go on, let's talk about the game then, Gary. Kumamoto against Oita. I had a check at what happened in the regular season between these two. So Kumamoto won away at Oita, didn't they, in the league, 2-1.
2-0, yes.
Or 2-0, was it? And then Kumamoto lost the home game at Egao Kenko, right, 2-1.
They were both 2-1, yes.
Yeah. So Oita do have, you know, there's reasons to be cautious, you know, for Kumamoto in this game. And I had a bit of extra time this afternoon, Gary, and I'm just moving my reading glasses into the correct position on the bridge of my nose here. I took a look at the kind of history of round one playoff games in J2. So basically, they've had the playoff system or versions of it for about 8 seasons. There were 2 years where there was only one game in the kind of first round, because there was a season where Kita Kyushu finished in the top 6, but they weren't eligible for the playoffs. And the same thing happened to Machida Zelvia a few years later. So I just took a look at the games that have taken place when it was a first round game between the fourth and the fifth place teams. The fourth place team has only won one of the 6 games, and the fifth place team has only won once. The other 4 games were draws, but as mentioned already, that means that the, you know, 5 times out of 6, the fourth place team has advanced. So, you know, history's on your side for Sunday. But that team, the only team that was, you know, one team that has, let me say that again, let me get this right. Oita do have the experience of winning a must-win away game in these playoffs, because in 2012, when they finished 6th, they won 4-0 away at Kyoto in the first round. Kyoto had finished 3rd, and then Oita went on to win the final against Jeff Chiba. So Oita, yes, you mentioned already, they've been in the playoffs before. They won both playoff games in 2012 without conceding a goal. So they do have a bit of a, not necessarily going to be plain sailing for Kumamoto on Sunday. Gary, how do you see it going? It's almost impossible to predict, I know, but what's your gut and what's your experience there telling you?
Well, as you know, John, J2 football, you can't predict a home or away win. I think if we go down the percentage of home and away wins, maybe it's 33% each. It's very hard to predict. And some teams go in great runs of form at home and they can't win away, and then it'll just flip and then all of a sudden they're great away from home and they can't win at home. Rowasso and Oita, they've both kind of been in and out form, away and home. So I couldn't predict. Rowasso at home, it's not a fortress yet, unfortunately. As you mentioned earlier, at the start of the season, they hadn't great home form, and it picked up and it helped them stay towards the top of the table. But we've lost 2 of our last 3 at home. Again, we do have that if it's a draw, we go through. Mm. But I'm not sure if that's, if there's 20 minutes to go and it's a draw, it might make us sit back. Hopefully not. Oki, the coach, he's been in playoffs before, so hopefully that will, a little bit of experience will help.
Mm.
Yeah, you mentioned that the fourth place team doesn't always do well in the playoffs, but usually the sixth place team goes well. Mm. So Yamagata is sixth. So maybe they could beat Okayama, and we could beat Oita, and it'd be fourth against sixth. That happens a lot in the playoffs. But as for the game against Oita, it's a Kyushu derby. I know you love a Kyushu derby, John.
I love to invent. I love to invent them. Anything can happen. Anything can happen. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose we're also, we haven't even mentioned the possibility of, not to sidetrack us completely, but I can remember, I think I went to watch a playoff between Yokohama FC and Jeff Chiba. I think that might have been 2012 as well. And Jeff scored a goal that I'm pretty sure was a handball early on and ended up winning 4-0 in that game. So, you know, you're at the mercy in these one-off games. You're at the mercy of perhaps, you know, a dodgy refereeing decision or, you know, a goalkeeper making a mistake early on. So yeah, I think asking you to predict what's going to happen is I've thrown you under the bus basically, Gary, with that one. I apologize, but I do think, you know, the point that you mentioned is really interesting. I actually think when we're talking about the playoff games in general, you know, conceptually, only the home team only needing to draw is obviously a massive benefit, like on paper. But when it comes to actually approaching the game, it actually makes things quite tricky because it's not a situation that you're in usually, right, in like regular season games. You know, how often are you in a position where you're trying to draw a home game? It's not that often. And like you said, that, you know, the scenarios that play out are things like, well, there's 20 minutes to go. Does a team like Kumamoto, if it's 0-0 against Oita with 20 minutes to go, do they try and kind of close the door, you know, and shut up shop? It isn't really the Kumamoto way, is it, this season? Under Oki, and then you're running the risk of, okay, well, you take off, you know, you take off Takahashi, you take off, you know, Sakamoto, and then what if Oita score with 10 minutes left? You know, then suddenly you need a goal from somewhere, and you might not have your most potent attackers available. You might have taken them off already. So I think it can be when these playoff games. I don't like the, you know, I think the home team only having to draw kind of messes up the sort of the balance a little bit too much, but it can make for some fascinating kind of almost unique scenarios, can't it, in the playoffs? But Gary, we wish Kumamoto the best of luck. I think it would be amazing if their fairy tale season continued into a kind of, you know, second round of the playoffs. I think they need to come up with better names than first round and second round. You know, the Lovan Cup gets like prime stage and something else stage. We need a bit more pizzazz, don't we, for these games? But I hope the adventure continues for Kumamoto and they can get through. But I think it's going to be a tough match. I got to see Oita up close when they beat Yokohama FC a couple of weeks ago, 3-2 in heavy rain at Mitsuzawa, and they are an awkward team to play against. I think they've really hit their straps kind of late in the season. We were talking earlier about how I think having the Lovan Cup to deal with, you know, the group stage of the Lovan Cup early on in the season kind of basically messed up the first half of the season for them. And then since the second half of the season, they just seem to have clicked and they've been really good. They're very good at time wasting as well, which could be not necessarily decisive, but could be a factor, you know, depending on if they score and when they score on Sunday. But yeah, I'll be watching if I can, and then yeah, best of luck, Gary. I hope Kumamoto can surprise us one more time this season. It'd be great if they did. How do you feel about the other game? Because you touched on it already. It's going to be Okayama against Yamagata, so third place against sixth. And something that you touched upon, which I wanted to mention, is the third place team historically does quite poorly in the playoffs, and the sixth place team does a little bit better. So again, I've with my serious spectacles on, I looked at the kind of six times in the past that there's been a third versus sixth game. The third place team has won two of these and one has been drawn. So the third place team's advanced to the next round three times, but the sixth place team's actually won, you know, the away team's actually won three times outright. And I think one of those was Yamagata in the past, because they won away at Omiya, who'd finished third in 2019, but Yamagata lost in the next round to Tokushima. And just a reminder, Okayama do have playoff experience in the past in J2 in 2016. They were sixth in 2016. They went away to Matsumoto, who'd finished third and won, but then lost in the final to Seretse Osaka that year. So Yamagata, yes, they do have a kind of club history of finishing sixth and then going on to beat the third place team away in the playoff semi-finals. And I don't know about you guys, but it just seems like fate that these two are together again, because obviously during the regular season we had that incredible game where Okayama beat Yamagata 1-0, but then the game was annulled, wasn't it, because Yamagata's goalkeeper had been wrongly sent off when the referee invented a red card rule.
Yes.
That didn't exist when he stopped a back pass. Yamagata's goalkeeper Masaaki Goto, he stopped a back pass from a defender from going over the line with his hand, and the referee sent him off for, you know, deliberate handball, denying a goal scoring opportunity. But that's not, as far as I can make out, the problem was that's not in the IFAB rules. So that the game was annulled and replayed. Didn't bother Okayama too much because they won anyway and actually increased their lead, didn't they? They won 2-0 in the rearranged game, and that yes. was another one of my highlights of the season was when the game restarted. It was in the 8th minute with Okayama having that indirect free kick, you know, just sort of, you know, on the penalty spot pretty much, and Yordi Baez just slamming it into the roof of the net. Was I think more games should start like that, to be honest. And the kick off in the centre circle is a bit old hat, isn't it? But yes, so in the regular season, Okayama won away at Yamagata twice because the first game was annulled. They won the second one 2-0. Okayama did beat Yamagata 2-1 at the City Light Stadium, though, at home, you know, later on in the season. And I think that game ended up being played just a few rounds after the, you know, the reverse fixture. So, yeah, weird season for these two. They're kind of together again. We've already established that predicting these games is a waste of time, Gary, but how do you think it's going to go?
Yeah, you said the third place team, usually, maybe they have this complex because they've just missed out on automatic promotion, and that disappointment factored in against the sixth place team, which is usually on a good run to try and reach the sixth place, is on a high. Mm. And when those two opposing forces meet, the team on the high usually gets the jumper on the team in third place. So maybe Yamagata go in, I wouldn't say favourites, but it should be, again, another tight game. Mm. I did crunch the numbers on if you did a mini league of these four teams, and see who would come out on top. And it would be Okayama. As you said, they have 11 points and 3 wins against the other teams. Oita would actually be at the bottom with 1 win in their 6 games. So Okayama, they were in the playoffs before, but they've never been to J1, I don't think. So in the same similar position to Roasso.
Mm.
I'm not sure if they'd be in the same happy mood. Having finished third, maybe the supporters would want them to win these playoffs.
Mm.
And they've won most of the games against the other teams in the playoff bracket.
Mm.
Yeah, but this game, as I said, you can't predict it.
No.
Yamagata had the best goal difference of all the teams in the playoffs. They had scored the most goals and they've conceded the fewest goals of the four teams. They're on a good run of form. I can't call it, John.
No, that's okay. I deliberately threw you an impossible question just to watch you struggle, Gary. So don't worry. I think for Yamagata, you were right, I think, to put them in the same category of Oita as teams who, having made the playoffs, will be hoping to get to the next round or even, you know, win the playoffs. Because, yeah, they're teams that have been in J1 before, and by the, you know, by the criteria level that we are at, they are big, they're big clubs, right? I think it's fair to in the context of the J2 playoffs, because they've been in the playoffs before, they've been in J1 before. Yes, yeah, so I was impressed with Yamagata, you know, beating Tokushima 3-0 on the final day to kind of, you know, clinch the playoff place. That was kind of the big drama, wasn't it, in round 42. I think adding Akira Disaro has just been transformative up front. I mean, they were kind of stacked with attacking options and sort of flair players, if you like, already. He's just added something a little bit different. I'm not even sure what it is, whether it's just his presence in the box, you know, for headers even, or is it kind of, he's not even particularly big, but he just has a physical presence somehow that's really helped them. So you wouldn't bet against them, would you? But Okayama, they're a tough nut to crack, aren't they? They're a difficult team to play against, especially difficult to beat at home, I think, and that's the key point. Yamagata have to win the game, right? Draw's not good enough. Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating. I don't think it can be predicted. I think we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, it's a shame again that this is the first kind of playoff series we've had for three seasons, right, since the pandemic. But I wonder if the league couldn't have just maybe helped us out with the scheduling a little bit more. I'm not really sure about the logic of playing the games, you know, with the kickoff staggered by 1 hour. I mean, why couldn't one game be at 1 o'clock and one at three, you know, or one on Saturday and one on Sunday? There must be reasons, Gary. There must be forces higher than us that know the answers to these questions. But what do you think?
There's someone pulling the strings somewhere. I don't know why. It's a crazy time.
Yeah, it doesn't even make sense. I thought it might be to try and avoid, I guess they're playing on Sunday so that they're not clashing with J1, you know, big J1 games on Saturday. But that doesn't really explain why they're playing at 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. But yeah, how do you feel about 1 p.m. on Sunday? Is that a good, you know, in terms of you being able to attend and everything? Is that like, what's your preferred, how would you schedule the playoffs? Let me change the question. What would you have done with these two games?
Well, I would have had like a Saturday, Sunday night game, or something, maybe not night, but going into twilight, 5 or 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I just
it's not too hot, it's not too cold.
Yeah.
Still some light.
Yeah, I just feel like there was so many possible options. Like, you could have had like one on Friday night, you know, then one on Saturday, or one on Saturday, one on Sunday. You could have done like a, if you're going to put them on the same day, it could be a double header, right? You know, like, you know, 2 p.m. and then 4 p.m. Because there's no extra time in these games, right? It's decided in 90 minutes.
No, it's only 90 minutes.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. So, yeah, I guess we'll just never make it as football administrators with our crazy wild ideas of being able to watch, you know, all the games at a sensible time. But yeah, fair enough.
Someone somewhere is sitting in an office going, oh, 5 minutes past one. And 2 o'clock, that'll do.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be, I don't know what the, but the very same people then the following week will be like scratching their head of like, weird, a lot of people like switched off at half time of one game and then they seem to switch to the other game. Oh, why can't they just pick which game they want to watch? It's like, well, you forced them to pick which one they wanted to watch, you know. So, but yeah, I think it's difficult for me because we normally ask a guest who comes on to JTET, we ask them to pick out some kind of, you know, highlighted games from the slate, you know, the 11 game J2 slate to focus on. But we, you're spared that headache this time, Gary. Obviously, you're gonna be watching Kumamoto against Oita, and me too. But yeah, I'll also be tempted to watch a bit of Okayama against Yamagata the second half of that game if I can. Yeah. All right, Gary, I think we covered everything from playoff predictions to football governance. It was a good wide ranging chat. If people want to follow you on Twitter, what's your handle so that they can keep up to date with Kumamoto this weekend?
Just at Gary Irwin. Follow me on Twitter. I'll put up some photos and pictures of hopefully a happy Kumamoto City when we get to the final of the playoffs.
Fantastic. I hope you bring the right cable this time, the right charger. That would be good. That would be good as well.
Yes. Just pro tip, don't cheap out on your charger cable. Get an official one next time.
Well, look, if you get into J1, we'll send you all the cables you need, just to make sure we'll need the big pod wants you know, would want you to have the best cables available. I'm sure if you become a J1, if you're promoted to a J1 correspondent for next year. But no, seriously, thanks for coming on, Gary. Really appreciate it. And yeah, it's good to talk. I didn't realize it had been so long. I didn't realize it had been 15 rounds since the last chamber. Time gets away from us sometimes, doesn't it? thanks a lot, Gary. It's really good to talk. And yeah, good luck for the game on Sunday. I hope it's a good occasion. And then Kumamoto, you know, make you proud yet again this season.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on. And I hope you enjoy the game.
Yeah, will do. Thanks, Gary. Talk soon. Okay, yeah, please stay tuned, everyone. We are going to, me and Gary are going to retire now. I think we're going to go for a lie down. But yeah, Magic Mike Innes is going to be along shortly. It's the J Talk Short Corner segment as usual. All of the J3 news is coming up in a moment. Thanks for listening and downloading the pod. And thanks for supporting JTET and the Big Pod on Patreon. We appreciate the support and we've really appreciated it all season. So yeah, thanks for listening. Please stay tuned. Here comes Mike with the J3 news in the short corner. J-Talk Extra
Time. Hello everyone and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini-pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on fixtures in Round 30, as well as previewing the Round 31 matches coming up this weekend. First, an item of J3 news since the last pod. Tegevajano Miyazaki have announced the tragic news that forward Masato Kudo has passed away. Kudo complained of feeling unwell after training on the 2nd of October and was taken to hospital, where he was diagnosed with hydrocephalus, a build-up of fluid in the brain. Kudo underwent surgery, but his condition worsened and he passed at 2:50 p.m. on Friday the 21st of October. Masato Kudo was 32 years old, married with a young daughter. He was a four-time Japan international who made his name as a footballer with Kashiwa Reysol and later turned out for Sanfrecce Hiroshima and Urenofa Yamaguchi, also playing in the MLS with Vancouver Whitecaps and in the A-League with Brisbane Roar. He returned to Japan from Australia at the start of this year to play in J3 with Miyazaki, for whom his last appearance was against FC Imabari on the 25th of September. Masato Kudo, may you rest in peace. Now onto the action, and Round 30 kicked off with one game on Saturday the 22nd of October when Miyazaki were obliged to travel to Shizuoka Prefecture to take on in-form Fujieda My FC. This turned out to be a match of missed opportunities, Fujieda taking the initiative in the first half, but Ryota Iwabuchi, Tojiro Kubo and Masahiko Sugita all failing to find the net when well placed. 6 minutes before half-time, however, Iwabuchi managed to break the deadlock, latching on to a through ball from Ekiyuki Yokoyama and beating Kenta Ishii with his shot after Miyazaki's Kairi Shinbo had lost possession in midfield. The visitors pulled level somewhat out of nothing only 5 minutes into the second period, Hiroki Okuda finding space on the right-hand side and sending in a cross that Keigo Hashimoto headed powerfully in off the underside of the bar. The rest of the match was more even, Tegevajano having their half chances and MyFC's Ryo Watanabe and Keigo Enomoto both having goals chalked off for offside. But it ended Fujieda 1, Miyazaki 1. 2 points dropped for MyFC, whose four-game winning streak comes to an end, and a good point won under very difficult circumstances for Tegevajano. The other eight matches all took place on Sunday the 23rd, when leaders Iwaki FC made it 5 wins in a row via their home game against Ehime FC. For the 13th minute opener, Ryo Anita's clever header set up Hiroto Iwabuchi, who moved away from Ehime defender Sora Ogawa and flicked it past Kenta Tokushige. It was pretty much one-way traffic from then on, Tokushige keeping the visitors in it until the 85th minute when the home side scored perhaps the most un-J3 goal of the year so far, a long goal kick by Daiki Sakata that bounced into the Ehime penalty area where Anita outfought Daisei Suzuki and drove in his 15th of the season. The mighty Mikans did manage to get one back in stoppage time when Motoki Ohara floated a dangerous ball to the far post and young substitute Shu Mihara headed in. Final score, Iwaki 2, Ehime 1. Iwaki need only 4 points from the last four games to make certain of a top two finish. Ehime remain 8th, but all of a sudden are 5 without a win. Among the promotion contenders, the other big winners were Matsumoto Yamaga, who for the second week running came from a goal down to claim the victory, this time at FC Imabari. The home side took the lead in only the 5th minute, Marcus Indio making a determined run down the right and crossing for Kazaki Nakagawa, whose header struck the post, rebounded onto the back of keeper Victor and bounced over the line. Marcus Indio was a thorn in the side of the Yamaga defence, in particular Masato Tokida, but Imabari couldn't extend their advantage and were pegged back early in the second half when substitute Paolo Junichi Tanaka picked up on a loose ball just outside the area and hammered it past Shu Mogi. 3 goals in 2 games for Tanaka, and what a way to celebrate his 29th birthday. He was involved in the build-up for Matsumoto's winner as well, combining with Akira Ando, whose low ball into the box was swept in at the near post by Lukao. Final score, Imabari 1, Matsumoto 2. 2 defeats in a row for Imabari, whose season is looking like it's run its course. Yamaga have, from somewhere, found some resilience and are back in contention. Matsumoto remain 4th, but they've moved level on points with 3rd-placed Kagoshima United, who were held to a draw at Fukushima United. Korki Anita scored his 15th of the season to put Kagoshima ahead in the 17th minute, somehow finding space in a crowded penalty area to get his shot away into the corner past Kaito Yamamoto. But the smoking volcanoes can be pretty uncertain at the back, and Fukushima had their chances, eventually drawing level 5 minutes before half-time. Kosuke Tanaka wrestling his way past Yuto Kide and pulling the cross back from the byline for the unmarked Riku Hashimoto to bury the header. Not much other goalmouth action in this one, although Yamamoto did make 2 full-length diving saves in the closing moments, first from a Masayoshi Endo header and then from Jin Hanato's curling shot. It wasn't to be for the visitors, though, and it ended Fukushima 1, Kagoshima 1. Fukushima playing out the season in mid-table, Kagoshima in the thick of the promotion fight. For the trip to Vanrare Hachinohe, Katare Toyama coach Michiharu Otagiri made 7 changes to the side taken apart by Fujieda in round 29. His team started well and went ahead in the 15th minute, Shunta Takahashi receiving the ball in the box and laying it back for the in-rushing Tsubasa Yoshihira to fire a venomous shot into the bottom corner. But under Ryo Shigaki, Vanrare are quietly becoming a more difficult opponent, and they took the game to Katare, equalising just after half-time through Teppe Chikaish, who squeezed a header inside the far post following a well-worked short corner routine. Ryusei Shimodo and Yusei Kayanuma both hit the woodwork with headers as Hachinohe pushed for a second, although in the 89th minute, Toyama almost stole the win when Takahashi headed against the post with the goal at his mercy. But in the 6th of 5 minutes of injury time, Yuki Aida kept the ball alive and played it into the Katari goalmouth, where Kayanuma jabbed it in at the near post. Final score, Hachinohe 2, Toyama 1. 5 wins in the last 6 games now for Vanrare. Katari, 8 points off the promotion spots. They'll surely be playing in J3 again next year. J-Talk Extra Time. No quiet end-of-season game at Giravansky Takushu, where the visitors were Gainare Tottori. Giravans were two up inside the first 9 minutes, going in front when Yuki Nakayama crossed for Nobuki Iketaka to score his first in a yellow shirt, doubling the lead through Nakayama, who again found space on the right, but this time cut inside and sent in a shot which deflected off Gainare's Junya Suzuki and past Ken Tajiri. Tottori supporters could have been forgiven for fearing the worst, but midway through the first half, their team pulled one back, Ryusei Takao feeding Yuya Taguchi, whose angled shot was heading off target, only for Ryuji Sawakami to turn it into a cross and score at the far post. Giravans almost restored their two-goal lead when Yosuke Kamigata sent a free header against the crossbar. But halfway through the second half, Gainare tied things up. Hiroto Sese floating in the corner, Kosuke Masutani heading it on, Suzuki in space to finish at the far post. The game was heading for a draw until injury time when Kitakyushu's Takeaki Harigaya was caught in possession by rookie Mun Inju, who advanced to within 25 yards from goal and crashed a left foot shot low past Yuki Kato for the winner and his first pro goal. Final score, Kitakyushu 2, Tottori 3. A disappointing loss for Kenshin Yoshimaru's underwhelming Giravans, who drop back down to 12th, Gainare's potent attack enabling them to get out of jail and out of the bottom four. In the Yuki Stealth derby between AC Nagano Parseiro and YSCC Yokohama, coach Stealth's current side Parseiro succeeded in getting the better of his previous club. In only the 8th minute, Yuki Morikawa sent a low ball across the face of the away goal, where Reo Yamanaka was brought down by Yutaro Yanagi for a Nagano penalty kick, confidently converted by Hiroki Yamamoto. The same player almost made it 2-0 early in the second half, hitting a sweetly struck volley from barely 8 yards that YSCC keeper Ryosuke Sagawa somehow managed to keep out. And in the 55th minute, the visitors pulled level as the home defence backed off Shuntaro Kawabe, allowing him room to move forward and finish past Issei Oichi. But Parseiro went back in front only 4 minutes later, a weak defensive header by Minoru Hanafusa eventually falling to Yamanaka, who passed the ball beyond the reach of Sagawa from 15 yards. Final score, Nagano 2, YSCC 1. Stealth coaxing a positive end to the season out of his Parseiro players. YSCC making slow improvement under Kei Hoshikawa, but still rooted to the foot of the table. The two teams immediately above YSCC met at the Pikara Stadium in Takamatsu as Kamatamare Sanuki took on SC Sagamihara. Between them, the sides have won a grand total of 2 games throughout the whole of the second half of the season, so it wasn't an enormous shock when this one ended level. But Senaki twice led, opening the scoring in the 9th minute through Takuma Goto, who busted a gut to get himself into the box in time to meet Shunta Nakamura's cross with a first-time finish from 8 yards. After going close on a number of occasions, Sagamihara got themselves back in it 4 minutes before the break, Jungo Fujimoto's laser beam of a free kick giving Takuya Takahashi in the home goal no chance. That, however, was as nothing compared to Mizuki Uchida's golazo that gave the lead back to Kamatamari in the 72nd minute, meeting Ikki Kawasaki's corner first time from 25 yards with an absolute thunderbolt, a clear candidate for J3 goal of the season, and rookie Uchida's first goal as a pro player. Kohei Matsumoto put a header against the bar for the hosts soon afterwards, but in injury time, Fujimoto again levelled things up, this time from the penalty spot, the kick awarded for a handball against Yuga Watanabe. Final score, Seneki 2, Sagamihara 2. Uchida's stunning goal will live long in the memory of Kamatamare's long-suffering fans. For Sagamihara, the draw brings to an end their 5-match losing run. And finally, Azul Claro Numazu coach Kazuhito Mochizuki may find it hard to believe his team lost their game at FC Gifu, as they generally kept the hosts at arm's length, had forced a good save from Kazushige Kirihata when Terukazu Shinozaki was through on goal, and then, early in the second half, had gone in front when Naoki Sato's well-struck shot had been blocked by Kirihata, only for Ryoma Kita to tuck in the rebound. Soon afterwards, Yuma Mori had a good chance to make it 2-0, but clipped his shot just over the bar. Gifu finally put in an appearance in the last 5 minutes as Ryo Kubota hurtled down the right wing and centred for Kosuke Fujioka, whose surging late run into the box was brilliantly timed for him to lash a first-time shot into the top corner. And barely 80 seconds later, the home side took the lead, Ayumu Matsumoto's 20-yard shot looping off the outstretched leg of Sato over keeper Hiromu Musha and under the bar. Final score, Gifu 2, Numazu 1, further underlining the importance to Gifu of Kosuke Fujioka. He's got 15 goals for the season as well. Azul Claro displayed an uncharacteristic attacking intent, but are without a win in 6. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 30, noting that Ehime and Miyazaki have a game in hand. The top 6 teams are Iwaki with 69 points, then it's Fujieda with 62, Kagoshima and Matsumoto both 60, Toyama 54, and Imabari 53. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are, in 15th, Numazu with 30 points, then it's Seneki with 25, Sagamihara 24, and bottom with 21, YSCC. Just the time now for a quick look ahead to the fixtures over the next few days. On Thursday the 27th, in what's sure to be an emotional occasion, Miyazaki stage the postponed match against Ehime. Then the schedule moves on to round 31 over the weekend, when there's one game on Saturday the 29th of October. That's YSCC at home to Fukushima. The other 8 matches are on Sunday the 30th. The top 2 are both away from home, Iwaki at Miyazaki, Fujieda at Tottori. Third-placed Kagoshima are at home to Ehime. Game of the round is a massive local derby, resurgent Matsumoto against determined Nagano. Fifth play 6th as Toyama host Imabari. Elsewhere, it's Numazu against Hachinohe, Sagamihana take on Gifu, and Sanuki are at home to Kitakyushu. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.